Welcome to just the saddest podcast you've ever heard. Hi, everyone. Welcome into Scrambled Eggs, your unofficial Marquette basketball podcast here on Crack Sidewalks. Joe McKenna, Phil Bush here with you to talk about the season ending for Marquette basketball and a sad performance from the Big East. Phil, we'll talk brackets in a bit, but this is always kind of the, you know, even no matter how far the team goes, this is always the, unless you were winning the national title, this is kind of the bummer podcast of the year when you're wrapping things up.
Right. And to be fair, this is sadder than most of the end of the year podcasts we've had. It just, you know, a pretty down year. Admittedly, we maybe have some positives going into the next season, but just overall, you know, we had a great game against Seton Hall and then just a complete shellacking against Villanova. Too bad the team that showed up Saturday night against NC State didn't show up against Marquette in the Big East tournament.
Yeah, then maybe Marquette might have had another round or two. But I think maybe for some people, Phil, the end of the season may become a bit of a relief just because the team just maybe it's some of us were tired of just seeing the team struggling and doing the best they could and still coming up short time and time again. So maybe now, for some, this is kind of like, all right, now we can just count down to the era of Ellenson, who, by the way, broke his hand in the Wisconsin State playoffs.
Not great positive news there either.
But there are much worse injuries that he could have suffered, so he's just going to miss a couple months, probably won't play in the All-Star games. You know, the McDonald's game and Jordan game. But other than that, he'll be fine in time for when he shows up on campus for workouts and all. But so, yeah, just snake-bitten all around, it is seen for Marquette this year. But we're going to start the show just talking about how the season ended. And we're not going to go too in-depth on the two games because it's kind of late, you know, kind of distant memory at this point. But as you said, Phil, basically Marquette saw everything go right in one game and then everything go poorly in the next. Seems like Marquette could not miss against Seton Hall. We're getting a lot of open looks, had plenty of turnovers go in their favor. They were distributing the ball well, and then change all of that to the opposite against Villanova.
Yeah, it was night and day, and not even the performance was so quote unquote poor that I don't even think you could attribute it to the fact that they had to play the game roughly 2.5 hours after they finished the Seton Hall game. It was just the team was out of sorts. They couldn't hit. You know,
I think maybe you can attribute a little bit to it.
I mean, they were tired,
and also we found out later that Dwayne Wilson was playing with a
broken wrist. Yes.
So, I mean, that's certainly – I'm not sure if he had 100% healthy wrist that would have made up the 30-something points or whatever it was that Marquette lost by. What did they lose by, 35 points?
Yeah.
So, yeah, that I mean, a healthy Dwayne Wilson isn't 35 points better. But it certainly didn't help the cause.
No. And the team just looked out of sorts, and it was kind of – I don't know. I don't want to say it's a fitting end, but it was kind of one of the – it was an ending that kind of just fit the season. We kind of dominated against Seton Hall. Everyone went, maybe we've got something here. Maybe we can make a run. And then the Mack truck came out of the tunnel.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so it was just a bad ending to a bad season. And, you know, and we do have, you know, some injury concerns or some hospital stays. You know, Dwayne Wilson broke his wrist. Ellenson broke his hand, which both of which should be recovery. And then Luke Fisher was playing on a bum shoulder all season. We kind of knew that, but it was apparently significant enough that he had surgery last week to correct whatever issue was going on in his shoulders. So that certainly doesn't help when you're playing with one arm against teams like Villanova.
Yeah, I mean, I hope he can get to 100%. I don't know exactly what level of pain Luke was playing with, but and you know, when it comes to shoulder surgery, there's not much you would say it would be minor shoulder surgery. I would hope he has a full recovery ahead of him, and there's plenty of time to do it since he just had the surgery. But I hope he doesn't miss too much of off-season workouts, and he is, you know, 100% good to go when we get to November, because Marquette is going to need him to play at a high level if they're going to make the tournament next year. So
and by all accounts, in talking to my in-house physical therapist, if you will, you know, even the worst case scenario in terms of shoulder injuries, I mean, it's not a positive thing, because he would miss a fair bit of the off season, which is where the players get their most development. But in theory, he should be good to go with the worst case scenario by midsummer. So you know, he's going to be available. They're going to They're going to get him healthy, and Dwayne will be healthy, and in theory, Ellenson will be healthy. So, you know, I suppose this is as good a time as any to have these types of injuries as opposed to sometime during next season when we all have much higher hopes than we did for this season.
Yeah, we're going to talk about next season coming up in a little bit. Maybe touch on that a little more. We might have a spring podcast to go in that a little deeper. But I guess now that the season's over, Phil, and we've had a week or two to kind of decompress and take a step back, it's really unfair to judge a coach in 1 year. But taking the little pieces that we can from the season, how would you judge Wojo year one?
Actually, to be honest, and this is given the season, this is going to sound probably crazy or bad, but I had a more positive or Wojo exceeded the expectations I had coming into the year. The issues I had with the team, I really in no way attributed to poor coaching or sure there were issues with, you know, first time coaching decisions and, you know, some growing pains that are always going to be there regardless of the coach, whoever takes over going from an assistant to a head coach. But overall, he exceeded what I thought he would be able to deliver in year one. His performance this season, again, the record doesn't reflect it, I think gives me a great deal of hope going into future seasons that he is a good coach and will be able to deliver success in the coming years.
Yeah, and I think he kind of touched on that, and basically, first of all, I agree with you, and he basically kind of said that about himself in his season-ending press conference, and, you know, he said, I'm pleased with where we're going. I'm not pleased with 13-19, but he said he was pleased with the work his team put in this year and the progress he made. I think the limited roster forced him to play more zone to kind of protect his big guys from being in too much foul trouble. Or protect anybody from being in too much foul trouble this year. He said, as many have speculated, he wants to go to a much more man-to-man next year, and if he has a roster of 10 to 12 guys who can play, then I would think, you know, the foul issues would not be as big a deal next year, and he could play more man-to-man, and hopefully maybe the team's a little more athletic next year too and can do that. But yeah, I one thing I'll say about Wojo, I've liked his ability to adjust, whether in game or just between games, trying to figure out where his team is weak and how to compensate for it. And also, he has certainly proven to be a relentless recruiter. A little different than what we've been used to with the previous two administrations, Phil, where, you know, we're kind of used to seeing a dozen or more offers just sitting out there, and we're just kind of waiting to see which guy says yes. It seems like, I mean, granted, maybe this is part of this, maybe just reporters in the Marquette beat, having the sources they had in the past. But from what we learned, from what people are reporting, we never really hear about an offer to anyone until, like, just before he commits. It seems like Wojo doesn't really offer many guys until he is absolutely sure this is a guy I want in the program.
Right. Well, you wonder if it's managing the PR, managing the perception, because you would argue that, you know, we don't find out about a player that Wojo's going after until right before that player commits. So it kind of has the perception of, you know, 100% of the people Wojo wants, 100% of the people Wojo gets. Yeah. You know, which is a great thing to kind of go into someone's house with and say, hey, listen, I only commit to players that I really want. I'm committing to you. You know, everybody I commit to commits to me. Get on board because I want you. I mean, that's a great recruiting pitch. You know, because like Tracy Carter, regardless of the position we were in, but when the Nick Nesnowiak situation occurred, Tracy Carter was the best point guard available on the board by a lot of respectable services and people's opinions. Right. It was the best point guard on the board. Wojo went out and said, I want Tracy Carter, and he got Tracy Carter. So, I mean, that's impressive.
Yeah, he made up a lot of ground in just a few weeks there, seemingly, on Carter. And he was kind of a late bloomer himself, but yeah, Wojo really zeroed in. And it seems like most guys who take an official visit, granted, we're just 1 year in here, but still, most guys who take an official visit to Marquette under Wojo have committed. Like, the only guy who was actually visited and did not commit was that Akoya Gao kid who was transferring from Louisville and ended up choosing Georgetown. But as far as so far from what I know, maybe there's somebody I'm missing, but everyone who has taken a visit to Marquette has committed.
Right. Now, and again, that you wonder if that's part of his quote unquote recruiting game is the perception that, you know, if you're getting a visit from Wojo, it's serious and you should, you know, really be, you know, yeah. really be interested, because these things don't just get handed down like candy.
It makes it feel like it's exclusive. Like you're not one of 7 point guards he's talking to, or has offered, you know. I'm sure he's talking to several that we don't know about as far as other positions and kids he's looking at, but as far as offers, you know, that he's kind of making that exclusive, and we'll kind of see what he can do as an encore going forward, because when it comes to going on the next year and finding stuff for 2016, you know, he's not going to be able to promise the playing time necessarily that he has this year. I think that, to be fair, I think that has played into a lot as far as these guys who are committing, guys like Onim and Carter and Cheatham and of course Ellenson. You know, they all, some maybe correctly, some maybe incorrectly, are assuming they're going to be playing a lot their freshman year, and that's attractive to these guys. And, you know, some may be disappointed when they get on campus and find they're lower on the depth chart. You know, Ellenson probably won't. I think Ellenson will fit right in and start. It was funny. I don't know who asked the question, but somebody in Wojo's last press conference said, do you expect Henry Ellenson to come in and score right away? And Wojo said, gosh, I hope so. It's like, he better, or else I'm in a lot of trouble.
He did answer it in such a way that if you read between the lines, it was a, boy, that was a stupid question.
Yeah, it's like, yes, I absolutely do. But yeah, I think that's kind of played into this recruiting class. Now, if you know, while I do kind of expect Henry Ellenson to be a one and done, it's hard to project right now, but it kind of looks that way. But still, I would expect everyone else that's currently on the roster, projected to be on the roster, would be coming back next year. So he might not be able to promise as much playing time to the next class. So we'll see how that plays into what he can do for an encore next year. But early returns on him as a recruiter are pretty good.
Well, but let's be honest. The I have plenty of playing time kind of hook really is what new coaches or first-year coaches really have to hang their hat on until they have an actual record or an actual, you know, a style or an established reputation as a head coach. So Wojo's going to have to handle the transition from, hey, we've got plenty of playing time as a hook, to, hey, you know, this is why you want to be in our program, because we can do X, Y, and Z, even if you maybe don't get the number of minutes another program can offer you. That's going to be the transition. It's a different style of recruiting, and that'll be the next phase of evaluation for Wojo. Because like you said, he put this class together knowing, you know, Tracy Carter is by definition, unless something else changes, is going to have to play 20, 25, 30 minutes a game unless we get a grad or a JUCO point guard in on the roster. You know, so he's got that hook out there. Let's see how he can recruit when he's established, got a roster in place, and, you know, doesn't have 4 returning players the next year.
Yeah. Let's talk about the returning players, because as it is right now, only 4 players who got playing time this year are going to be back for Wojo next year. As we learned over the past week, that Steve Taylor Jr. is leaving the program, which was definitely came as a bit of a surprise to me, Phil. I think it came as a surprise to a lot of people who have followed Marquette basketball this year, because as we've talked about several times on this show, Phil, talking about Steve Taylor's performance this year, we chalked up a lot of, you know, some of the struggles he's had to playing out of position, and it was pretty clear, at least it seemed, that he was going to fit into a nicer role next year with 3 6-10 guys on the roster. But I guess he and or Wojo saw differently, and now Taylor's leaving the program. So how do you think this affects the roster for next year?
You know, it's disheartening. Obviously, we're not even close to insiders, so we don't know what's going on with the coaching staff or Steve Taylor, and the free Steve Taylor hashtag takes on a whole new meaning now. But
he has been freed.
He has freed himself, I suppose. Yeah, I don't get the logic of it. Maybe we'll see where he ends up and it makes sense. Maybe it was something where, if you look at the composition of the Marquette roster next year, maybe Steve Taylor has aspirations to play the 3, and the 3 is one of the few places that Marquette doesn't have available. Well, I shouldn't say available, but there's a log jam at the three more so than any other position on the court for next year, and maybe that's what Steve Taylor wants. He wants to play the 3, doesn't want to play the 4 or the 5. Because one could argue he did an awful lot of jump shooting in the back half of the season for a four. So I don't know. Maybe that's what he's thinking. I think it hurts the team for next year. I think Steve would have been a good leader. I also think he and Luke playing together started to really develop a strong rapport that would have been successful. And you know, regardless of how talented and good Henry Allenson is, you don't want inexperienced players just, you know, throwing them out there because you have to. You'd like to have a safety blanket where you've got a senior that can play minutes if Ellenson's just not adjusting or is having an off game or is being a freshman.
Yeah. And like when you're talking about the three for next year, yeah, I mean, you're looking at, I guess Henry Ellenson's going to play there some. He probably might probably be playing more of the four, I think, looking at the roster the way it is now. But he'll be playing three and four. Wally Ellenson probably fits in there as well. I guess, and yeah, Cheatham's coming in, so he's kind of a 2-3, and Sandy Cohen's kind of a 2-3. So yeah, there's a lot of guys who could play there, but I guess if you're going with three guards, yeah, you put him over there. But he's obviously a two guard, I think. But yeah, your point. I mean, there were plenty of guys who were going to play that spot, but I think Taylor had a role next year as a strong 3-4, a guy who could step out and play the three if Marquette wanted to go big, or he could continue to play the four, which I thought he could play really well, as you said, when he was alongside Fisher and with Helt coming in next year as well. He would have more bigs alongside him so he wouldn't get kind of trapped under the basket as he kind of did this year and kind of struggled there. So, but, I mean, you look at it, you know, it's too bad to lose Steve Taylor, but depending on who's coming in to replace him, maybe overall not a catastrophic loss for the roster next year. If you're looking at the big picture, it would be nice to have him. I would rather have him than not, but I don't think this is a loss that you say, oh man, we're really screwed now.
Well, I don't think it's like a season ender. I don't think it's him transferring is one of these where we go, oh great, the season's lost before it even begins. But I really think it narrows the margins significantly for next year's team. Because again, we're not barring a juke, you know, well, I guess it wouldn't even be a JUCO, barring a grad school transfer that's going to be a senior, we're not going to have any seniors on the roster next year. Yeah. You know, so you got to question where's the leadership going to come from? It can come from anywhere. It doesn't have to be a senior, but I think Steve Taylor would have been a natural leader for next year's team. So yeah. who's going to be that leader next year? Maybe it's Dwayne Wilson, which is long-term a good thing. But the team's just not, you know, it reduces a safety blanket. It eliminates it. And it's just confusing to me. I mean, Steve Taylor was a good soldier. I mean, he was, if rumors are correct, he was going to transfer before Buzz left. He was done with the Buzz Williams administration, and Wojo talked him into staying, and he stayed, and he performed, and he got better throughout the season. Yeah. So it doesn't make sense.
Yeah. I definitely salute him for his efforts this year. He really kind of took one for the team, playing out of position, basically kind of becoming the backup center just because he had to. He was essentially the starting center for half the season until Fisher became eligible. So I certainly commend him for his efforts this year. And if he looks around and he doesn't get an offer he likes and wants to go do what Juan Anderson did a couple years ago and change his mind and come back, I would welcome him back. I think it'd be nice to have him if he doesn't like what's out there for him. But I hope he finds what he's looking for. And who knows, maybe he just still hasn't been 100% healthy, and maybe part of his logic is maybe taking a year off to get healthy and maybe strengthen those legs would lead him to have a stronger last season of eligibility and maybe give him a chance to play pro ball somewhere. I don't know if that's part of his thinking or not, but I guess we'll see. I hope he finds up somewhere where he's happy, where he likes it. He's a Chicago native. Who knows? Maybe he ends up in somewhere in the state of Illinois, a little bit closer to home, although Milwaukee's pretty close to home as it is. But I don't know where he'll end up, but if he looks around and he doesn't like any of these options, I would hope he would still be welcome back to Marquette because they still have three scholarships to play with. And I'm curious to see what they do with those. But Steve would have been a nice piece.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, and Joe, if we're coming up with imaginary scenarios, which player that has transferred this year would you rather have for next year? Would you rather have Deontay Burton or Steve Taylor for next year?
Man. If Deontay Burton would commit to rebounding, I would rather have Burton. I would rather have his athleticism and explosiveness. Yeah. Yeah. I think I'd rather have him.
But you know, I would agree in general, but that's a big F. If
Yeah, it is. It's like saying I'd rather have Todd Mayo if his head was on straight.
Right, right. You know? Right, but, exactly. And Steve Taylor, I tweeted about this. I think the thing that hurts the most is we've been talking about the two things the team needed for next year were point guards and an active rebounder. I mean, we've talked about Jameel McKay being on this team. You know, if he hadn't transferred and gone to Iowa State, he would have been exactly what this team needed for next year, an active rebounder. Steve Taylor could have filled that role.
Yeah, yeah. Although McKay would be out of eligibility this year if he had stayed.
Right. Well, correct. You're correct. But, you know.
Yeah, he would have been amazing to have for sure.
Right. And so we've got Tracy Carter, which is probably one of the two point guards we need. Steve Taylor would have been the rebounder I think we would have needed for next year. So now it means with the three scholarships we have left, again, talking about margins, two of the three scholarships have to go to critical needs, where we have to get some form of a point guard and some form of a strong, powerful rebounding four type. Right. Those two things have to happen with the three remaining scholarships, which means you can only miss on one of them. Not that Wojo's shown a propensity to miss, but who knows? There's not as much available in the spring.
Yeah, and we'll be curious to see what kind of transfers start popping up as far as grad students. And I saw Bruce City Ball. They've been kind of tweeting out some of them as they've come along, and there have been some names out there that are interesting. I don't know if there's any interest from Marquette, but we'll see if Wojo is connected to any of these guys over the next month or so. But the name that jumped out to me is the Sean Miller kid, who is from one of the Ivy League schools, Cornell, I think. And because he had to redshirt a year because of an injury, he's already graduated, and Ivy League schools don't allow graduate students to play. So he has to leave, but he has a year of eligibility left. But he averaged like 10-8. He was like a 6'7 kid. So I mean, he would be, if he wants to come to Marquette, he would be a great fit academically too, if he's an Ivy League kid. But like I said, there's a bunch of names out there, and I don't know if any of how many or if any have been connected to Marquette. But I'm sure Wojo and his staff, I'm certain they have begun shopping, and I'm curious to know exactly who they are talking to and who they will end up offering and zeroing in on. But I agree with you completely. Marquette definitely needs some size up front now, because who knows how much of an impact freshman help will be backing up Fisher. Who knows how healthy Fisher will be. I hope he'll be ready, but who knows? Maybe he might be a little bit behind the eight ball. We saw how, you know, Juan Anderson struggled, you know, getting back in the game after he had some shoulder issues and had to have some surgeries early in his career. So having some help up front, I think, would be great, because, again, the rebounding that we lost with Steve Taylor, that needs to be replaced somehow. And so I think that would be a major target. And again, we've talked several times about the inexperience at the point guard position. Tracy Carter may be a great point guard, maybe a great talent right off the bat, but some inexperienced guard there, especially if it's a graduate transfer who's played in the NCAA, who's you know, maybe even has some tournament experience or something, he'd be great to have. I don't know if that person even exists, but we'll find out here soon enough.
Well, and we'll see who Wojo quote unquote targets publicly, and if he gets him, it'll be another. I mean, we're kind of getting an idea right out the bat if Wojo is a closer or not, and so far he can have all the coffee he wants.
He tweeted that, which, or put that on Instagram, which I thought was random yet appropriate. He actually tweeted out of that picture of Glengarry Glen Ross, said coffee is for closers only, and I'm like, oh, I wonder if he's referring to himself there.
That would be some ego we had not seen from Wojo before, so that would be interesting.
Yeah, it was like there was no context to it at all. He just put the photo on Instagram, and there was no context or anything to it. I think that he maybe he's talking about himself. Maybe he's not, but I just laughed when Wojo.
That seems appropriate given the way he played in his playing days.
Yeah,
it's as if it's the one, it's that side of his personality he tries to keep to a minimum in public as a coach, and it just slipped through the cracks this one time.
Maybe so, but overall happy with Wojo, and I'm just curious to see what he does now. This is kind of the next stage, next phase for him, because as we've said several times, with the possibility that Henry Ellenson could only be a 1-year player, maybe two at the most at Marquette, you do need to load up for this coming year.
And, oh, absolutely.
And you know, you can't just look at it as a rebuilding year and that looking at it as Henry Ellenson's going to be part of the rebuild. And then maybe you're going to be a tournament team a year or two after that. No, I mean, you want to be a tournament team and you want to be a strong team next year. So I think that's why he'll look to add some experience over the next few weeks with graduate transfers, and we'll see what.
Right. Exactly. And everyone should be a little patient because we're not going to know anything until the first couple of weeks of April, because we got to wait for March Madness to end before the kind of the transfer list really becomes solidified.
Yeah, so we'll keep an eye on that, and maybe by the time some of the dust settles, that's when we maybe crank up a new podcast, is maybe we get a clear picture of what the roster is going to look like. But before we wrap up this podcast, I do want to touch on the Big East and the NCAA tournament. I know as Marquette fans, we probably can't gripe too much because we're not in it, but still, we sit back and we cheer for other Big East schools to make the league look good, and we got off to a great start, we being the Big East, in the first day, going 4-0, but it's been pretty much a train wreck since then, Phil.
Yeah, everyone's a Musketeer, and that's about it.
Yeah, that's it. And you know, I'll say this about Villanova: the disappointment of the tournament. Yeah, that's mostly on Villanova. That's because I mean they were as good as the league was this year. I only looked at it as having only one Final Four contender, and that was Nova. So it's kind of like looked at as it's all on Villanova to get the Big East to the Elite Eight or Final Four. So, you know, maybe that's unfair to put on Villanova, but that's the way it is. When you're the dominant team in a highly ranked conference, you know, the conference kind of needs you to go far. So it's, you know, from that perspective, yeah, the disappointment of the tournament is on Villanova. But maybe big picture, you know, some of the other programs in the league maybe do need to step it up a little bit and get to the point where Nova is not carrying the banner for the Big East every year. And certainly Marquette is in that group, but you would like to see programs like Georgetown, for instance, you know, maybe St. John's or somewhere, or you know, get to the point. Maybe Xavier's getting there.
Butler,
get to the point where they're consistently. People are looking at them and say, all right, that's a team that can get to the Sweet 16 or further.
Well, you know, the problem – well, there's a couple of problems. One, this Nova choked last year and this year. I don't think that's unfair to say that they choked a little bit.
They underperformed. I mean, there's really no nice way to say it. When you're a one seed and you're in the East and you got an RPI that high and you're – basically, you got a favorable draw as far as location goes. It's not like they had to go across the country or anything. Yeah, I mean, they expected more. And even Jay Wright would say that. They expected more. They didn't want to go out. They're not going to say they had a great tournament by going out in the second round to NC State. They're disappointed, and I think the whole league is disappointed that they didn't get at least another couple, two or three more wins.
Right. Well, and Georgetown, you know, is starting to get a reputation as a team that can't do it in March. And the reason I bring this up is not necessarily to pick on these programs, but one of the things is there's a couple of implications here. One, financially, the Big East shares revenue from tournament wins, and the fewer wins we get as a conference, the fewer dollars we get as an individual school. So Marquette, you know, by Nova and Georgetown and Butler fought Notre Dame like the Dickens and almost won that game a couple of times. Yeah. But those losses hurt in the checkbook as well for Marquette and the conference as a whole.
It sounds kind of like greedy, but it's true. It's like, look, man, we can't go out there and get that money. You got to go get it for us.
Right. So do your job.
Yeah, come on. We're down here struggling, man. You need to go get that money for us.
Clearly, we need all the money we can get. Just help us out. Help a brother out.
But yeah, I guess, you know, it's frustrating, I guess, for me because, and maybe this is a bit of an inferiority complex coming out, but, you know, being a new league, we kind of want more national respect. And, you know, I was hanging out with some friends this weekend and, you know, they were talking about, you know, nobody's really talked about Villanova or Georgetown this year. And I guess I'm on the other side of it because I actually watch Fox Sports 1 and I watch all these games. I'm like, I've been talking about Villanova and Georgetown all year. Like, I've talked about them. But I guess all these people, most people, they watch ESPN who really don't dedicate much of their shows to the Big East. Not that I blame them, but that's just the way it is. And so they're really not in the national conversation that much. And so from that perspective, yeah, we would like to have a little more respect and people recognize the Big East. But when you've only got one team getting to the Sweet 16, you're not going to be in the conversation very much.
Right. And, well, and the issue, I think you touched on it, the second issue I really have, and is probably, you know, joking aside, is probably the bigger issue of the two compared to the financial is the perception, right? Perception is reality.
Yeah. And no one's going to remember that great non-conference the Big East had in December and November.
Right.
Know, everyone's only going to remember, oh, how many guys did you get to the Sweet? How many guys did you get to the Sweet 16 Elite Eight? Well, great, good job. So did the American Athletic Conference.
They don't hang banners for second best conference RPI in the country.
They certainly don't.
Unless you're Tom Crean. He might do that.
Oh,
sorry. In my bitterness, I had to get a jab in there. But, the perception is important. And I got in a Twitter, I guess, discussion with Dan Needles, the sports director for Channel 12, Saturday evening during the Butler-Notre Dame game. And he had tweeted out that the Big East, when Nova went down and lost, he tweeted out, "See, I told you the Big East was wildly overrated," or what have you. And and my response is, listen, a losses in a single elimination tournament don't define the success of a conference. If that's the case, then the AAC was the best conference last year when UConn won the whole thing. So that doesn't make any sense. But the perception is, you know, ESPN has a vested interest in promoting the conferences they're associated with. They're not going to promote the Big East because they're not making money off the Big East. So unless the Big East goes out and performs well and forces people to talk about them.
That's right. I mean, that's right. You really got to force it down their throats. I mean, you got to have, you know, three teams in the Elite Eight, and then they can't help but talk about you. You know, I mean, I know that's a high standard, but if you want to be nationally relevant, you got to have a big showing like that.
Right. I mean, everyone...
that's why it would have been great to have, it would have been so great to have Nova in the Final Four and then maybe one other team in the Elite Eight. And, you know, we could still get, you know, Xavier could shock the world, but they got a heck of a draw out there, you know, when they're going out to Los Angeles next week. But, it would have been nice to just be in a position where everyone has to say, all right, look, the Big East has some good teams. But the thing is, like I said before, all anyone's going to remember is how you perform in March. And, ask Bill Self, who's got 11 straight conference titles, but everyone will always look at him as kind of a choker because of, you know, Kansas tends to go down pretty early in the tournament. So perception tends to be the reality, and it would be, like I said, that's why I guess why I'm most disappointed is that the Big East is almost completely out of the discussion because I hate to say it, I don't know if Xavier's going to win another game.
Well, and the other part of it is, and I think Paint Touch has had an article on it right before the tournament started, and I think their major point was, hey, listen, performance this year impacts whether they would ever say it officially or not, impacts conference or committee selection for the future years. You know, the committee puts 6 out of 10 Big East teams into the tournament this year, and all but one of them are out before the opening weekend is done. And so next year is the selection committee looking at maybe, you know, the fifth Big East team or the third or fourth SEC team. Are they gonna put in the SEC team because, hey, we've been down this road before. You know, the Big East doesn't perform. They're quote unquote an overrated conference. What if that fifth team is Marquette? Is Marquette not getting in because as a whole the conference starts to develop a reputation for a conference that doesn't show up during the tournament?
Yeah, and like we saw that with the selection with teams like Texas and UCLA and Indiana, who were all kind of looked at as bubble teams, teams maybe destined for either Dayton or the NIT, and they were all three comfortably in. Didn't even have to go to Dayton.
Right, and because they said they were big conferences.
Yeah, and going 8-10 in a conference like the Big 12 or the ACC, that's probably going to be good enough. Whereas next year we'll see what people think of the Big East. Now I think what this does is put pressure back on the non-conference in the Big East, where Big East teams have to perform so well in the non-conference again next year that they can't be denied. You know, they need to get some big wins. I have no idea what the non-conference looks like for most the Big East teams. I'll say right now it's going to be very good if Marquette can play and beat LSU next year, because I think they're going to be really good because we'll be in that Champions Classic. But it is, maybe NC State's going to be there too, because they're looking after that win over Villanova, they'd be looking pretty good. But, yeah, so the pressure now is back on the Big East in the non-conference next year to make sure that respect is there. And then once they start playing each other in conference play, then they can get to where they need to be.
Right. Yeah. It's, you know, we gotta hope Xavier wins a couple of games here yet, to kind of bury the discussion. Cause I was amazed at how quickly the announcers at the end of the Nova game were like, with 5 minutes left, talking about the poor performance of the Big East, and Butler hadn't lost yet, you know, hadn't even really started playing. Xavier had already advanced. Nova was struggling, but certainly wasn't out of it. So, you know, it's just amazing how quickly it turned. So, you know, we've really got to have a good season next year so we can really have the conference be successful and bring in that money.
Yeah. Because that's, in the end, you know, we got to continue to validate the league. And when it comes time for, I don't know how long we have with Fox Sports, it's going to be a while, but we'd hate for Fox Sports to down the road saying, you know what, maybe this isn't the best deal for us. So we have to be relevant, and, you know, we got in the end, you just got to perform better in March. And hopefully, like I said, it's not all on Villanova falling short this year. The rest of the programs, and not to say everybody, we're not going to have 10 national title contenders. Come on, let's be real. But we do need to have just a few more teams that are, you know, in the national conversation, highly ranked, and teams that people are going to break down their brackets and say, okay, I can see that team getting to the Final Four.
Right. We need to avoid situations where somebody sees Georgetown and goes, all right, first or second game, they're going to lose, so we should just not advance them. That's...
I will say this in Georgetown's defense this year. At least, A, they lost to a single-digit seed, and B, it was a bit of a road trip, and they were actually 4-point dogs in that game. So I don't view the loss to Utah as a catastrophe for Georgetown. I know they would have rather won the game, but yeah.
I don't think it's a catastrophe either, but it's certainly, at a minimum, it is a non-impact on the reputation, if not a, you know, a further enhancement of the poor reputation.
I guess we're going to see what some schools have to do in this offseason. We already see how DePaul has made a move. I mean, Oliver Purnell is out. Who knows? You know, Ben Howland is the name we keep hearing there. I don't know how I'd feel about that. I mean, I guess as a Big East fan, I would like to see DePaul better, but as a Marquette fan, I certainly don't want to see DePaul great. And I think Ben Howland could maintain that. I think DePaul would be better, but I don't think he would make them great.
Well, you know, the thing is, like, we always talk about, oh, you got to have good programs in the Big East. So, again, so we can go to the tournament and get a lot of teams in. But you also do have to have doormats. And I would be perfectly fine if DePaul remained the doormat. Yeah. We could have 8 or 9 good teams in DePaul. Like, I'm fine with that.
Yeah. Everyone's joking around that Tom Crean should take that job if he and Indiana part ways. That would be hilarious, I think.
There's no way he takes that job.
He'd rather be an analyst at ESPN than coach DePaul.
Absolutely. And that would be a major demotion for him.
Oh, you think?
Yeah. But I would kind of enjoy it. Actually, that would be, I can't decide whether I would love it or hate it, because I would love just watching Crean have to, like, demean himself for that job, quote unquote. But I would also hate having to be around him in any way for extended periods of time.
Yeah, we'll see what happens with old Tommy. Doesn't look, tensions are high.
Right.
In Bloomington. Fair
we're,
enough.
We're getting near to the point where someone's going to have to order a code red.
Yeah. And we'll see what some of the other programs do. I guess I haven't read much on Seton Hall and their coach, if they're going to make a move or not. I haven't heard a vote of confidence. I haven't heard that they're making a move. And Steve Lavin sounds confident that he's going to be back at St. John's. I don't know if everyone feels that way. But those are two programs that may or may not be making coaching moves. I guess we'll find that out over the next week or two.
Well, in theory, we should be a program that is not on the coaching carousel this season.
Yeah,
I
think
it'll be good.
Yeah, I never say 100% on anything, but I would say I am 99% certain Marquette will not be involved in any coaching carousel news this offseason. Wojo being in his second year with a great recruiting class coming in, and I don't think his, being 13-19 in year one, I don't think people are going to be rushing to steal him away from Marquette if some jobs open, like, say, Texas or Indiana. Or I don't know who else might open.
Well, and if Texas opens up, we know who's the primary there.
There will be bells ringing in Blacksburg, that's for sure.
Yeah, well, let's put it this way. If Marquette somehow ends up involved in the coaching carousel business this year, it may be the death knell for me as a basketball fan. I may just quit.
Yeah, it's like,
Something has gone horribly wrong.
It's a complete I feel confident Marquette's not going to be. If anything, I don't know. Maybe I don't know if any assistants are planning on moving on or looking at other things. But honestly, Wojo said, for what it's worth, that he plans on having the same staff back next year.
Well, and that's good. I mean, they're a young staff, and they've got talent. We're going to need players to. We're going to need some of that staff to be able to take on the players for next season in practice, and also maybe show them how to shoot the 3-point shot. One of these days, we're going to have to be good at that.
Yeah. Maybe we'll get the coach's 3-point shootout at Marquette Madness this year that the fire alarm was had to postpone this past year.
Though it may depress the fan base, let's do that first, because I'm actually very excited to see that, except I would be depressed if the coaches come out and just destroy the players.
Hey, I think Henry Ellison would do well, I would hope. But
I would think so. And in theory, Sandy Cohen and Dwayne Wilson would be good shooters. But, I mean, some of the assistants on the bench were historically good 3-point shooters for their respective teams. So it'd be a tough sledding.
Yeah, maybe we'll get that next year. But I guess that's kind of a look at where we stand through 1 weekend of the tournament. Like I said, that's pretty much it for our season here on Scrambled Eggs. We appreciate everybody listening all year. But, you know, as we do always, we will continue to have some off-season podcasts. They will be coming much less frequently, probably maybe every month or so as news happens. And as Phil said, hopefully not too much bad news, which is what we've been used to in the past. We can actually hopefully just sit back and maybe laugh and chuckle at the coaching carousel this year. But I don't expect much more shocking news, knock on wood.
Nope. Well, one bit of, I suppose, positive news for the team, they did announce that the team will be going in this off season to Italy for a tour. They're going to do some exhibitions with some Italian. I don't know if they're semi pro or pro teams and some college teams in Italy.
I wonder if Travis Diener made that happen, like his connections over there.
I would think there was something there to it, but it's going to be, I believe it's late July, early August, something like that. So that's a very, you know, I remember hearing when, I think it was Duke and Georgetown have both done foreign trips in the off season.
Well, Georgetown went to China and got in a fight. Remember
that?
Oh,
yeah, that's right. That's right. That's what, yeah, I remember that now.
But, that'd be good. You say it's in July, so obviously that would mean everyone, or, you know, all the new kids would be on campus by then, or most of them anyway. I don't know think about Wally Ellison and his situation. I don't know how much time he's going to spend training with the high jump. Of course, if you don't know, he finished third in the NCAA in the high jump, which is pretty awesome. You know, so he's an Olympic-level talent there. I don't know if he'll be taking time off to train because, you know, it would still be a long shot for him to make the Olympic team, but he's in the mix where he could have a shot to make it. So I don't know if he'll take time off and train or not with them, but I'm excited to see what he can do in a basketball uniform.
Well, I'm even less qualified to talk about Olympic high jump than I am college basketball, but shocking as that is. But, you know, it's one of those things. I'm curious to see how good he actually is at basketball, because part of me, as much as I hear about his high jumping ability, part of me wants to kind of go, Wally, we appreciate you being here. We want you here. But your future may be in high jump. You may want to go that direction, and, you know, to the exclusion of basketball. But I don't know. There's rumors out there that he's been really good, I am in no way comparing the two. But the rumors around Wally and how he's performed in the season with him sitting out have been comparable in terms of volume and different number of people talking about it as Dwayne Wade. Not saying he's Dwayne Wade's ability, just saying that a lot of people are saying, yeah, he seems like he's a much better player than we would have anticipated, so we may have a solid player on our hands.
Yeah, I'll say this about Wally. You know, for him to be a world-class high jumper, you know, some of that is God-given, but to be that good is work ethic and discipline. And thing is, he only does it part-time, the high jump. And to have him, you know, I am just so encouraged by the work ethic he must have to be that good at the high jump and to be world, because that is just a lot of discipline, a lot of hard work, a lot of fitness. You know, just keep him, he is just a top level elite athlete. And if he applies that to basketball as well, I think he will continue to improve and, you know, be a significantly better player than he showed in his limited playing time that he got in Minnesota. So I'm curious to see how he grows and develops and fits in. And, you know, with Steve Taylor departing, I think there's a great opportunity for him to be a significant player next year for Marquette. So yeah, I'm excited to see what Wally can do next year.
Yeah, it'll be interesting. So we'll see. It'll be, you know, the off season is here now, and so we've kind of got to sift through and get the little nuggets until we have Marquette Madness some, you know, 6 months from now.
The countdown is on to the era of Ellington.
Yes.
And I'm excited for it. But again, we'll probably check in with a future Scrambled Eggs podcast, probably April or May sometime, maybe once the dust settles for recruiting and grad transfers and all that, and if there's any other news to touch on, coaching carousel, whether we're a part of it or not, we'll probably chime in, especially if people we know are involved.
Right.
Former friends and colleagues. We'll see if anything happens there. But as always, you can check us out on cracksidewalks.com. That's where we post the podcast, or on iTunes as well. Hit us up on Twitter. I'm Joe McCann3. Phil is M-triple-O-F-23. Cracked Sidewalks is the team Twitter handle. And, of course, there is the Scrambled Eggs Facebook page. Any final thoughts, Phil?
No,
the madness.
No, I'm just ready to watch more basketball unemotionally, and get to the off season and just kind of regroup for next year.
Yeah, fingers crossed that we don't have what I would call. I guess we couldn't have the worst possible Final Four that Marquette could imagine, but you know, with Notre Dame, Wisconsin, and Louisville are all still alive.
Oh.
At least Indiana's out, so there's that.
That is true.
But, yeah, we could have an uneventful final, a vomit-inducing Final Four as far as Marquette fans go. But hopefully not. Hopefully we can enjoy it, and then we can just count on down to the era of Ellington. But until next time, everyone, seashells and balloons.